Thank you for joining us for the Retronauts 10th anniversary panel. Before I begin, I want to talk about the date of October 4th, 2006. It was a momentous date in world history. So number one, WikiLeaks was formed.
Do we share an anniversary with WikiLeaks?
Yes, we do.
And we're just as... Maybe we're the ones who DDoS'd the internet the other day.
It could have been us. We're just as potentially dangerous. But WikiLeaks would go on to inform us that people who make Adam Sandler movies don't like Adam Sandler either. On October 4th, 2006, the TV show Lost would officially begin its third season, amounting to the best possible year for a series that would ultimately disappoint billions. And President Bush signed the Department of Homeland Security...
He's disappointed thousands.
And the last thing that happened was President Bush signed the Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Act, which will probably get one of us on stage arrested one day. But most importantly, October 4th, 2006 was the first Retronauts ever that launched that day, and you are all here to help us celebrate it. I'm just here for street passes, so thank you for coming. To introduce everybody, I am your host for this panel, Bob Mackey. Next to me is the great Jeremy Parrish, and we also have Chris. A 7 out of 10.
I'm not pregnant or anything.
You're glowing, Jeremy. And we also have Chris Kohler. And our...
He's
spectacular.
Oh, nice.
Uncanny, even. And our last surprise guest is Scott Sharkey!
Come on down!
He has been risen from the Lazarus pits to join us. I'm not sure where he went or why he's here, but he's here and we're all happy. And he's here to talk to us about Retronauts. We're going to share stories. This is a very disorganized panel because we're slightly disorganized people in our own way. But first, I really want to talk about the origin of Retronauts. And this is really just like Uncle Jeremy telling me a story. I think we're all going to take turns sitting in his lap for the next 45 minutes. So I hope you wore load-bearing pants, Jeremy.
I didn't really sign up for that.
So, Jeremy, maybe you can tell us just where Retronauts came from. I'm curious. I know it was part of the 1UP's initiative to make podcasts, when podcasts were a new thing, when Marc Maron was just a twinkle in the eye of the podcasting god. Where did Retronauts come from?
It was forged in the fires of Mount Ziff Davis.
That's very much like Mordor.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Actually, Ziff Davis might be more evil.
Well, there was just a fire in the Ziff Davis building, right?
Oh, was it?
Nobody could really put out.
I was nowhere near that.
Was that
your desk? It probably was. It's been smoldering since I left.
Wow, it's like old times. I don't know. I'm actually the person who started the show, but I don't remember any of that.
I remember you telling me about it. I remember I was in the 1UP office for like some reason or another, because I was probably writing a review or collecting some review copy.
Chris, why don't you tell me how I started the show?
This
is very much an oral history now.
I very clearly remember you saying, we're going to start this podcast, which again, in 2006, I was kind of like, we're going to talk into a microphone, and then you're going to upload it, and people are going to listen to this, like, voluntarily. And like a radio show, but not on the radio. And you were just like, yeah, it's going to be called, you know, Retronauts, and it's going to be entirely about, old, classic 8 and 16-bit video games. And I was just like, I want to go to there. And I was just like, Jeremy, I would really, really like to do this, and I think that he's like, yeah, no, I assume you'll be a regular contributor, so I'm like,
Yeah, so at the time, like everyone has said, podcasts were a pretty new idea, but 1UP, Ziff Davis had been kind of an early innovator in that space online, especially for video gaming. Jane Pinkert, who was our news editor for a little while, I think in 2005 or so, started something called, I want to say like 1UP Weekly or something.
It was like a roundtable that she did.
No, it was before the roundtable. It was just like someone would sit in her office with her and just the two of them would talk into a microphone. I was on one episode pretty early on. And from that, it kind of expanded into the roundtable, and then Garnet Lee took it over and it became, you know, the proper 1UP Yours or whatever it was called. It's all, like I said, it's all very blurry to me because there were so many people and so many different names, and I was only kind of tangentially involved. But, you know, the magazines that Ziff Davis had under the same banner as 1UP, EGM, Official PlayStation Magazine, Computer Gaming World, later Games for Windows magazine, they all started doing their own podcasts, which they all grumbled about and thought was stupid. They were like, who cares? But they didn't get that it was a chance for, you know, the staffs of those magazines to get together and communicate their personalities and their chemistry in a way that, you know, just online print production doesn't do. And so these became really popular by the metrics of video game websites in 2005, which, you know, was, you know, the internet was a smaller place back then. So it was relatively popular compared to now, not that big a deal. But anyway, no one cared about old video games except me. So I was like, I want to do one too. And I figured it would last about 3 episodes. So I just called it Retronauts because that was a retro gaming blog I'd been running on my personal site and then moved over to 1UP's blogs. And I didn't bother to think of a better name for it because, again, it was going to last for 3 episodes or so, and then everyone would stop caring and it would go away. But then it just kind of kept going. So, Bob, October 4th, was that when the first episode was recorded? Was
the first podcast episode?
Was that the Metroid episode that was done on video?
The history of Retronauts is kind of like biblical history. No one really knows for sure what happened, except for, you know, scholars, and I am not one. But that was the first date it was posted. And I know there was a Retronauts episode 0 about Metroid 2. And there was something about Donkey Kong, too. I mean, do you remember these things? They were videos first.
I remember the Metroid video. Was Donkey Kong part of that? Sharky, was it that?
I was there, yeah. You
and Nadia Oxford was on a podcast, like, on a Skype.
You actually had a camera for some reason. I was, like, trying to avoid those, so it's still kind of sore.
Yeah, originally, it was there was podcast and video kind of... They were both happening at the same time, yeah. Right?
No, the idea was to have podcast and video happen at the same time, but we did that 0 episode and realized... Oh, this is really unwieldy, and there's a lot of trouble. So
oh no, I'm sorry. I mean,
I stopped doing video. I mean, that asshole Scott Sharkey.
Yeah, that's why we stopped doing that.
Unfortunately, there's no smoking in here, so
the videos were happening right. It wasn't like the podcast ran for a few years, and then there was video. Like there were Retronauts podcasts, and there were Retronauts videos, really from the beginning.
The videos came a little later.
The bonus stage stuff was like 2007 or so. Like that was pretty early.
That was like. Months later. That's years in internet time. Yeah.
November 4th, 2006 was a Saturday, so we didn't record it then. That would have been when we put it up, I guess.
No, October 4th.
October 4th. Oh, no, I don't know that.
No, I think we recorded it a day or two before that and posted it. It was Final Fantasy III.
That's right.
Yeah, time to go with the DS
remake. DS version was coming out, yeah.
The important thing about, like, the first 2 years of any podcast, it sounds like everyone is half asleep and afraid to say anything. And that is the truth about Retronauts. I mean, it was, like, one of the first podcasts I ever listened to, and I stuck with it. But if you go back to any old podcast, everyone is so low energy, it's kind of funny.
Not me.
Except for Chris. Chris is...
I took the podcast like a duck to water, man. I still don't even understand
if you
what
look at the
podcast is. But I know you just put the microphone in front of me, I'm like, God!
If you look at the waveform of any Retronauts, you can see when Chris is talking.
One of my enduring memories of Retronauts is that our producer, Andrew Pfister, anytime Chris started talking, you'd see him adjusting dials.
But you know, this was the era at Ziff Davis and these magazines where it was like drinking was not discouraged, it was encouraged at work. So maybe everyone was just half drunk on these episodes, except Jeremy?
No, that's just how I am.
Okay.
I don't think there was any drinking during Retronauts. That was more of a Garnet Leak.
Okay.
Oh, no, I was pretty much perpetually half.
Yeah. I mean, but you weren't drinking on the show. You drank heavily before the show.
Well, yeah, no, I was a functional alcoholic, though. So, yeah.
Very functional.
I quit, by the way. So.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Yay!
I'm having my first tango in like 20 years, which is amazing.
Okay, so anyway, that's how it started. Let's talk about something weird and exciting. Is there anything weird and exciting, Bob?
What's weird and exciting? Well, I think, like, a lot of people here want to know what it was like, including me, because I got in kind of late, what it was like to, like, just exist in that sphere of the games press when it was more of a burgeoning force in the world, when it had more of a presence. The thing about Retronauts is we get a few complaints about having limited subject matter, but one of the key reasons Retronauts started was you had an entire building full of people who could speak about anything conceivably. This is back when websites had things called staff. and not just a bunch of freelancers they would underpay.
Copy editors back then.
Yes, oh my God. Instead of having one guy that, you know, records video, records audio, edits text, edits photos, etc. But I think, like me, I idealized that time in the games press because I was trying to get in then, too. I didn't really get in until, like, the last gasp of that era when there were a lot of sites, when there were still magazines. And I think, like, if you guys are anything like me, I do want to hear what it was like in that time. Because I want to find a time machine and go back to there.
I would like to find a time machine and go back there also. I think actually everyone sort of who comes into an industry or a business like this sort of sees what happened before as more of a golden era. Because I feel like I missed out on the cool stuff. I read like that crazy nextlevel.com thread about Game Fan and like people doing cocaine and playing Yoshi's Island.
I think it was acid.
At E3, and I'm like, wow, that is not at all the experience I had in video games.
GameCock parties.
What's that?
The GameCock parties where it was like Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, like all of that stuff kind of happened and was coming to an end as I was entering the games press. Like the day that I started at 1UP.com was, I believe, the very last time that Ziff Davis had a staff cruise where the whole company went onto like a cruise ship off the coast of San Francisco and just sailed around and drank for a day. Like that happened the day before I started.
And I mean, so, the global economy crashed in 2008, right? And so the video game industry, all the lavish parties also kind of went away.
Right. So there was like 5 years that I was in there before, like, you know, starting to fade away a little bit. Basically, print was starting to go away. And print was very lucrative for a long time. And that began to be replaced by internet, which is much less lucrative. So, you know, Ziff Davis was a magazine publisher, had a bunch of magazines. Everyone in the magazines kind of looked at 1UP.com as like this sort of upstart that was trying to siphon off their resources and stealing their exclusives and things like that. They didn't quite get that it was, you know, the future. And then by the time they did realize it was the future, there was a different sort of bitterness. So I always kind of felt like an outsider at Ziff Davis a little bit until the point where the magazines went away and everyone became 1UP, at which point, like, we were all part of one big family. But that took, like, 5 or 6 years. So, the podcasts were part of that time. So there was definitely this sense of, like, a territorial sense, with each little magazine or publication being its own kingdom that sort of jealously guarded its secrets and its exclusives and its interviews. But there also was sharing, and like as a company, everyone hung out and was friendly. It was just, you know, sort of on the business side there was that suspicion. But the podcasts were, I think, one of the things that helped break that down, because even though they didn't really make us money, and you know they got like 5,000, 6,000 downloads. I don't know the exact numbers, but like Retronauts today gets a lot more downloads than it did 10 years ago or 7 years ago or whatever. You know, even though that was like a small sort of slice of the business that didn't really have any profits to it, there was that sense of community that emerged. You know, on the 1UP boards and places like NeoGAF, people started to download these podcasts and realize, hey, there's like these cool people talking about video games, and they're sharing information and sharing anecdotes and, you know, breaking embargoes maybe a little bit. And they, you know, it started to become this sort of valuable community building tool. So I think podcasts did help sort of break that down. I don't know that Retronauts did, because it wasn't tied specifically to a publication unlike, you know, EGM's podcast or OPM's podcast.
I think it was advertised in EGM though, right?
It was advertised everywhere, but I mean, it wasn't tied to a publication. So it was kind of like the floater podcast. But that was why it was great, was because, you know, Ziff Davis at the time did have a staff of like 40 people, a lot of whom had been in the games press since the 90s and had all this experience. They had been through, you know, like to every E3 so far. They had been through the weird kind of golden era of the PlayStation, and they had all these bizarre experiences with breaking Nintendo NDAs and having to deal with lawsuits and stuff like that. And they just had experience. They knew the video games we were talking about because they played them. They wrote about them sometimes. And it was just a great opportunity to pull on this amazing pool of resources that was there at 1UP and, you know, the company, and just say, like, hey, you know a lot about Pokemon. You wrote a strategy guide on Pokemon. Come be on our Pokemon episode.
And video game journalism at that point did not reflect back on what had come before. It was very much about like news, previews, review, repeat. And it was all about what's coming next, what's next, what's next. And you never saw stories about what had happened before. And so you're kind of missing the fruits of all of that experience and the being able to reflect on things. Not to mention the fact there just really wasn't a lot of media out there about old video games at that point. It was very much an experiment.
I forget about that. I was like the weird-ass freak who kept writing about old video games. And people.
It was like us and like Destructoid had Retro Force Go at this kind of at the same time. And then,
Would you really call out like Virtual Console as the one thing that made this more of a mainstream topic, and what sort of helped launch Retronauts?
I think just in general, there has been sort of a move toward nostalgia, as you know, video games have moved kind of in their own direction, and you know, toward the big package AAA games, and so that's left the idea of sort of classic video games as its own thing. And I think, you know, there's like the rise of AAA games and the rise of indies who look back to Super Metroid or Mario or Sonic or, you know, Phantasy Star and say, that's the kind of game that I loved and that's the kind of game I always wanted to make, so I'm going to make that game. So I think it's been a lot of factors that are probably just inevitable as a medium ages and matures. The same way, you know, people in the, I don't know, the 80s loved their big band showstopper Hollywood movie productions from the 40s. I don't know.
Well, but, and that's something that recurs over and over again. That's the point of nostalgia, especially with like a cohort of young adults who are just leaving home, maybe encountering new people for the first time. The one thing they have in common with everybody is like their trashy pop culture, and they're like, oh God, you remember Thundercats? And you're kind of doing the same thing. It's like, do you remember Kid Icarus and how busted that was? And I still never got the hang of that.
Yeah, we all have very, I mean, you know, you start to find out everybody has a very different story about their childhood and how they interacted with these games and when did they get this game. Did you get this game when it came out, or did you have to wait until your birthday next year before you got it? I always loved, like, well, obviously, Jen Frank's stories were always amazing, and the central theme of her stories was that her adoptive parents wouldn't let her have video games, but they did not consider computer games to be video games, and they did not consider Game Boy to be video games. So Jen was an expert on Sierra, you know, point-and-click games. She was an expert on Metroid 2 Return of Samus, and she had a total knowledge gap for any console between those two things.
So we're coming up on the Q&A section soon, and I want to ask everybody just what your favorite memories of the show is, because for me, I think I just remember any project I like as a project where I think I'm getting away with something, and that was always true of Retronauts, especially when we were working within IGN, and it was like they were becoming YouTube partners and building a new studio, and meanwhile, I was in the podcast studio recording a podcast about the Kunio-kun games with Ray Barnholtz. So I took a bit of hipster pride, maybe too much, and I like again, it always felt like I had a rare luxury to do this, so I always took pride in doing it. Do you guys have any specific memories of your favorite times on the show? I loved meeting, you know, Ron Gilbert, doing podcasts with Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman about my favorite game, Day of the Tentacle. Just getting the chance to meet and talk to people that I would never encounter outside of this industry. I always treasure those moments. I don't know, do you folks have any memories of the show that you really treasure?
I think I always enjoyed the show most when I wasn't hosting it and didn't have to do all the heavy lifting and planning and production. So, like, when Frank Cifaldi brought in a bunch of Tengen people, that was amazing because all of them had great anecdotes, and I didn't have to do a thing. I just got to sit there and listen to, you know, people who were part of this fascinating slice of history, you know, like creating unlicensed games for the NES behind Nintendo's back and really getting away with something, just sharing their experiences. And yeah, like that sort of thing was always it didn't happen enough in my opinion, but when it did happen, it was amazing, and I loved being there for that.
I really kind of enjoyed half-assing it a few times. I never really had a plan, never really printed out a script for the show or anything, but the few times I did do it, it kind of went off the rails.
People love the survival horror episode, Sharky. I always hear that.
That was impossible to edit. Like, it was just people coming and going, and we were stuck in a closet, and like the power went out at one point. And by the time I actually had to edit this thing together into something cogent, it ended up like Pulp Fiction by the end, just everything was back to front. Yeah, it was more memento than a podcast. But I had fun doing it. It was a great environment to be in for that, too, because everybody did have an area of expertise, and there's a good chance that somebody who wanted to talk about whatever you were talking about would just pop in the door. And it was just perfect having all those people and easy access.
Yeah, and I mean, in addition to people working at Ziff Davis, we also had freelancers like Chris, and, you know, just people that we knew in the community who we could call on and would happily come in and join us. So there was a real... We were incredibly fortunate, and I didn't really appreciate that at the time, but I would kill to be able to create a podcast like this in that environment again. It could be so good now that I have so much more experience and so much more maturity to really like get a handle on it. So I feel, you know, maybe this isn't a good memory, but I do feel like the old Retronauts was a little bit of a wasted opportunity, and that's a shame, but maybe inevitable.
But you're saying that you finally appreciate it.
Yes. Taking 10 years.
So before we go on to our Q&A session, I want to talk about...
We
have more stories? Oh, Chris.
I don't remember any of it.
I remember you played Donkey Kong briefly.
What?
You played Donkey Kong briefly?
Yeah. I mean, that was. I was thinking about that. I wish we had the clip. I wish you could just roll the clip.
It's buried on 1UP in their proprietary video format, whatever that was.
We shot this funny video where I was throwing barrels.
Oh, I remember this now.
Yeah.
I will try to include this in the blog post if I can find it.
Yeah. Whoops. Should have found it.
Sorry. So I want to end our talk amongst ourselves with just asking everybody, like, why we do this show, like, what we're trying to get out of it. I really discover why I do this show through talking to people who I meet, like, after panels like this and, you know, getting comments and things like that. I mean, I got a question from someone last night, and they were like, how do you know all this stuff? And I was like, well, a very, very lonely childhood up until probably my mid-20s. But part of the reason is, like, I have all this stuff in my brain, and it needs to get out and in order for me to feel better. So it's kind of therapy. But another reason that I like to do the show is podcasts are there for me in my most boring times of my life. And hearing people talk about queuing up lots of Retronauts, like for an 8-hour car drive, or when they're going through something, or when they're flying, like if I know that I can be there to entertain someone when they're bored, I get a lot out of that. And I love hearing that. Jeremy, like, how do you feel? Like, what do you get out of the show? What is your kind of goal with the show? Like,
that's a great question. You know, it's weird because I don't listen to podcasts, and this isn't some snobbish thing. It just, like, that medium doesn't interest me. If I'm going to listen to something, then it needs to be music.
It's got to be prog rock, right, Jeremy?
Yes.
you got to slide into a beanbag chair and...
No, 80s new wave and video game soundtrack.
Speaking of 86, I still have one of your old iPod shuffles full of prog rock.
Oh, yeah?
It's like Vandegraaff generator and shit. It still works.
Oh, yeah. No, I gave that to you.
Oh, thanks.
It's yours. Did you enjoy Von der Graaf Generator?
Very much.
Great. You guys should listen to Von der Graaf Generator.
It took me 10 years.
I'm pretty much always writing or working on something, so podcasts are really distracting for that, so I don't listen to them myself. But I know a lot of people do, and they seem to enjoy the podcasts that I work on, so I'm happy to keep making them, because it's not really that difficult to just kick back in the studio and talk about a video game for an hour and a half. I mean, there's a lot of research that goes into it, and then there's production, but like...
The talking is easy.
Versus writing an equivalently sized retrospective, it's a lot easier to just talk.
Yeah,
it doesn't require video production, so yes, the opportunity cost, exactly. So it's an easy way to just kind of, you know, get information about classic video games out there. And the name Retronauts always kind of spoke to my ambition for the show and for the blog that came before it, which
going
was
into space.
Yes, going into space.
That's a new Patreon goal.
I wanted an excuse to explore video games that I had never had a chance to play before, and that hasn't always, actually that's really rarely happened because I have a lot of other responsibilities, so Retronauts tends to be me falling back on things that I know, but I am making a real effort these days to venture into new areas and spend some time with episodes on topics that I don't know that well. And that's actually something that we'll talk about in a little bit, that I'm really determined to kind of double down on in the new year. But, you know, it's a chance for me to explore areas of video game history that I don't know, because there are lots of them. And hopefully to enlighten people on, you know, the things that I've learned over time or that I have researched and discovered as I, you know, put together a new episode.
So, Chris, I know you're not like a core Retronaut. You're like sort of the Pete Best of the Retronauts. Like, what do you get out of
him?
You weren't fired for Ringo, but...
He's our regular session guitarist.
Okay, sure. He's part of the Wrecking Crew. why do you enjoy being on Retronauts, and what do you get out of it?
Why do you enjoy being on Retronauts?
I just said what I... Bye.
Yeah, so probably the same thing.
Same thing? That's plagiarism, Chris.
No, it's talking about old video games with this group of people. I mean, that's not something I could replicate on my own, so I mean... There's a lot of old
video games with puppets and stuff.
I've seen it.
The same. I made co-hosts out of old gin boxes. But feel right.
We're down to box gin.
So, Sharky, do you have anything to say?
Nope.
Okay. I guess we're going to move on.
Anybody else want to do?
Okay. So basically, none of us actually enjoy the show.
I do. I love everybody. Let's go on to Q&A. I guess maybe like form a line that won't cause a fire hazard, and we'll take you one at a time until we're out of time. We got about 15 minutes, so please try to make your question snappy.
Oh, my goodness.
Woo.
It's a lot of questions. I just want to be really, I just want to talk to you guys and say that a question is a, if you've not heard of one before. A short sentence that is ended with a question.
Yes. If we diagram it, it should be just one straight line. But yes, hello.
Hi. One of my favorite things about Retronauts is all of Jeremy's voices. Can we get a toad voice, please?
You know, I really hate to say this, but in the past few years, my voice has really just, like, lost its range. It's part of getting old. I'm really sorry.
So no!
Yay. Yes.
So you've covered a lot of... topics over the 10 years that you've done Retronauts. Is there any topic that you've just really wanted to get to but have just never been able to cover despite of all the things you've tried?
Did we ever do one on the Spectrum?
We did have Jazz Rignall come in because who better to speak about the Spectrum than Jazz Rignall?
I'm going to say I'm really biased against Sierra games, but they deserve an episode, so I really would like to do that. But they always like just shove me away when I try to play them. But I will try to do something about them soon. That's really my goal.
I'll be on the episode.
Oh, cool.
I'd love to do a lot more looks at like Apple II software. I know we've kind of touched a little bit on some of that, but there's a lot in the Apple II realm that really deserves more coverage.
Yes.
Can you guys talk a little bit about the theme music for Retronauts? It's one of my favorite things about the show. Right?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
I think there's two or three different themes that have come along through the years. So you can talk about that.
Oh, sure. Well, the newer theme from 2013 onward is from Anamanaguchi. We contacted them. They wrote us an original song.
That was a Kickstarter goal.
That was Kickstarter goal, yeah. So they wrote that for us, and I think it's great. It's really fast-paced and catchy. I never get tired of it. Jeremy, who did the original song?
That was Lena Chappell. She's... a composer, I think, works in some games now, but at the time she was just kind of a fan of 1UP and was sort of, you know, getting her start in the industry. And I think I met her through Jen Frank. But at any rate, like, she... she did the theme for...
Act of Time Babel. Yeah.
The first Retronauts theme, crap, what was his name? His handle on 1UP was Cyrenix. I don't remember his actual name, and I feel really bad about it.
We'll find out before we post this.
Years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but I think I just like put a call out and said, hey, is anyone interested in doing a theme? And a few people sent in samples, and I hope we gave him money, but I really don't know. Anyway, it was a good theme. I liked it.
Yeah.
Has there ever been like one particular episode that got like more hate mail than anything else, or
Sega Master System?
Master System did, but also the Genesis episode where we were in a hotel in Tokyo, a bunch of us gathered around, and it was the 20th anniversary of Genesis, I think, or 15th, 20th,
mm-hmm.
and you spent the whole time talking about how terrible it was. that got a lot of hate mail, actually.
Yeah.
People seem to not like me for some reason that I don't understand. none of you, of course. No one stabbed me on the way out, but my episode I did about video game violence, or the mini episode after that, where we looked at a fluffy news magazine piece that was basically like a Nintendo promotional piece, and it had an always cranky John Stossel on it, and I made some lighthearted jokes at his expense, and I got like these insane 2,000-word screeds sent at me, and
people are still leaving iTunes reviews talking about how terrible we are for it.
Because we're not fair and balanced or something, I don't know, but there's going to be a sequel to that one soon that I'll get more hate from, so look forward to that.
And there was the Sonic call-in episode, which kind of was
that people love that one, Jeremy.
No, that episode itself was its own hate mail. It drove me away for years.
Hi.
So I've been listening since that October 4th episode. So this is awesome.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Nostalgia, like, on the mind. I'm wondering what your kind of like N64 kid moment was. Like, what was when you were a kid, the Christmas or the birthday or something, the game or system that you got that was like, you know, just pure joy.
It's not a video game, but I got Eternia for the Masters of the Universe playset that was like this big. I just lost my freaking mind. My 5-year-old mind.
I sold it like a teenager.
No, it was literally, there was a big tower in the center, and there was a Grayskull ship. There were three towers connected by a tram that was motorized, and all this crazy stuff. Yeah. Oh, it's worth a bajillion dollars now. that's not a video game, though.
I think mine was just getting an NES because it wasn't a birthday or Christmas. This is going to be sad, but my parents got divorced when I was very small, and my grandma just got me a Nintendo because, you know, love, toys can replace love very easily. And I carried that with me throughout life, so just getting an NES out of nowhere, this thing I sort of like drooled over for years in like 1988, that was a huge thing for me and sort of set me down this dark path that I'm on now. So
I always had to buy my own video game systems, so I didn't have that moment of, like, unexpectedly...
You've always been old.
What was Vietnam like, Jeremy?
I'll tell you about my wound sometime. No, but I think the first time I saw a Nintendo 64 in a store kiosk, and it had Super Mario 64 playing on it, I was like, how is this possible? I played some PlayStation games before that, but this was something else. It was amazing. So, yeah, that still sticks in my memory.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
I'm trying to think of a specific video game. I would say Gauntlet for the Commodore 64.
Really?
I was obsessed with that arcade machine. Like, that was the one time I ever stole money. just sneak down to the bar and play Gauntlet. So the fact that there was a home version that actually had all the on-screen stuff, you know, I was really impressed.
You got to feed that wizard, man.
For what?
You got to feed that wizard.
Yeah, basically. But I did finally get it, and I was thrilled to death, and it didn't work. Like, the disc wouldn't load, I was heartbroken. It wasn't until a week later, I said, maybe I should try unplugging the Fastlane cartridge, and then it was fine. So it kind of ruined my Christmas morning. It made for a nice New Year's.
Hello.
Hi. One of the cool things about listening to you guys over the course of this 10 years is see your opinions on certain games or kind of games evolve over time, maybe in your appreciation or enjoyment of them. So what I was wondering is, what game or kind of game do you guys each feel your opinion has changed most drastically about?
Silence.
See, still think Donkey Kong Country is pretty mediocre.
I've gained an understanding of Zelda 2. I still find it hates me, but at least I know why. So I'm not as just volatile and angry about it as I used to be.
You've discovered it's the Dark Souls of Zelda.
I'm not allowed to say that about anything anymore. So
I'm not your boss anymore, so...
Oh!
So you're free.
Yes, it is the Dark Souls of Zelda. Except Dark Souls is good, so never mind.
I mean, I've always...
I'm sorry, Shane.
When I was a teenager, I brought Earthbound when it came out when I was, 15, and I liked RPGs, but at the time, I was just kind of like, the graphics are not really doing it for me, I hate the inventory system, and I was very kind of impatient, and I said, some people like this, some people hate it, I'm kind of in the middle, it's okay. I think the older I get, every year that passes, I like it more because I just replayed it on Virtual Console, and I just it's so peaceful. You know, it's so beautiful. Such a beautiful game that in my mid 30s, I appreciate it so much more than I did 20 years ago.
I'm going to say Game Boy. I liked handheld games a lot when I first started at 1UP, but I kind of looked down on Game Boy, and in fact, I got to know Jen Frank because I wrote a really scathing review of Metroid 2, like a retro review, and she left a comment that was like, "You're terrible. How could you think this?" And from there, we became great friends. And, yeah, like I just remember thinking, oh, there's not much good on Game Boy. Like the system was just too primitive to be entertaining. And now I devote most of my free time to chronicling the Game Boy. So there's actually quite a bit of good stuff out there. Also a lot of total trash, but that's true for any system. So yeah, Game Boy is definitely the area of gaming that my opinion has changed the most, I would say.
I can't play MMOs anymore.
My God,
I'm just done with them. I don't know. I used to be like, you have to
You're taking all your vices.
Pretty much, yeah.
But did you ever really play MMOs, or did you just dig around in the character generator?
I still do that. Okay. I don't even like have the pretense of trying to play them anymore. I'm just making like terrible creatures.
Okay.
And doing things I shouldn't.
Cool.
I remember going to your house and playing Two Worlds, which is not an MMO, but yeah. you were playing Two Worlds, and you're like, I have to show you this, and you go down, and like this guy at a ranch, and he's like, the horses got out of the coral! Voice actor never having
so they were seahorses then.
Don't be stingy.
Don't be stingy.
As opposed to stingy.
Yeah.
You think that's red alarm?
Last alert?
Last alert.
Yeah. Thank you.
Answers your question and several other questions.
Hello.
Hi. So my roommate curates a blog dedicated to a retro like game creation system called ZZT. And he sent me here specifically to ask you, Chris, if you could, you know, share anything about your Yoshi's ZZT game that you made.
What do you want to know? So when I was like 7th grade, I kind of discovered ZZT, which is the first game that was made by Epic Games. Tim Sweeney made it himself and had an editor. Anna Anthropy has written a wonderful book about ZZT. I was just like, I was not original. So when I was in like 6th grade, and 6th, 7th, and 8th grade or so, I actually drew horrifically bad comics like in class, like with Yoshi as the star, and kind of like developed this whole thing where Yoshi, I don't know how it happened, but like Yoshi became like this huge idiot. And then like, the joke was that he was really stupid, and it was him versus Princess Toadstool constantly having a friendly rivalry. I don't know why that became the funny thing.
Sounds very much like Super Mario Kun.
Yeah, it was just like the characters going off into really weird places with them. And then when ZZT came around, I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing these Yoshi comics, so I really should do a game about Yoshi. And so all the stuff in those Yoshi games is like the personalities that they had in the comic, but of course it made absolutely no sense to anyone if you weren't me, and it's just like this just bizarre, you know, like alternate weird reality Mario world thing with lots of toilet humor and some terrible
ZZT.
I was the Sonic Chew guy, basically. Yeah, just doing these just completely ridiculous things. And then like, you know, and of course it's self-insert fan fiction because that's it's the best kind of fan fiction. So like, you know, I'm in there, all my seventh grade friends are in there. They exist. You'll never see them. You will never see them.
So like in your parents' garage?
Added.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So that's Yoshi games.
Thank you.
And you can. Yeah. The internet has a forever memory, so literally you can go and play these games I made when I was 13. They're all on ZZT websites and stuff, and of course they're immortalized because Anna Andrew wrote about them in the ZZT.
Cool, thank you. That is our last question, actually, that we can take. We have a few announcements to make.
Yeah, I made a game like that.
There's some crosstalk happening.
Right.
You can find us at retronauts.com, of course. I take it, I assume everyone here has heard our show before. Has no one heard our show before? Wow, thank you. I'm sure all this is very confusing to you, so thanks for coming. And I do want to say that we have an announcement, but we're all supported by Patreon. We're here because of Patreon, so if you give, thanks so much. It's patreon.com/retronauts. There's rewards if you want to give to us, and we basically do the show based on that alone, so we can't be here without that. So if you give to us and you're here, thanks so much. And I think Jeremy has a Patreon-related announcement to make.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I really want to kind of double down in 2017.
We're going retro, really retro,
on topics that we've never explored before because it's something we don't have a lot of knowledge about, maybe. So I'd like to take the podcast weekly, which means that we're going to hopefully start up a Retronauts East, where I'm going to meet with people that I know where I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, who have a lot of knowledge about vintage PC games, Apple II, Atari, things like that, areas that Retronauts has never explored. So we've set kind of a new Patreon goal for ourselves, and hopefully we can meet that, and it's going to take additional funding because I'd like to pay these people for their time, and if we do record more frequently, then I'll be traveling to San Francisco more frequently to record with Bob. So so it's a little extra investment or requirements on our part, but yeah, that's something I really want to do. It's an area that Retronauts has always been sort of weak in, these particular topics. So it's kind of a long-term goal, and I'd like to realize that in the new year. So hopefully everyone can help out. If not, that's okay too. We'll do our best.
Get till it hurts.
Yeah. So we have to go now, but thanks for coming. I'm going to stay 10 more years. I'm promising that now in audio form. So Jeremy, you're stuck here. And we'll be at Quarter World tonight at 8 p.m., so we'll see you there. And thanks for coming to the panel, everybody. Appreciate
it.
And we'll be outside if you want to talk.